Hey, Startup Hustle listeners, before we get into today's episode, I've got some exciting news to share. If you've enjoyed the insights and stories here at Startup Hustle, you're going to love what we have in store at our brand new podcast called Product Driven. I've always described myself as a product guy first, entrepreneur, software engineer, but really a product guy. I love building products. Many people struggle, though, with how to take a product idea and build a tech product, while software engineers struggle to understand the business side of things and they just don't see the big picture. My new podcast, Product Driven, is about that gap between business and the tech side of building software. It's designed for startup founders, tech leaders, software engineers, and anyone who loves tech and startups. Thank you for being part of this community. Enjoy this episode of Startup Hustle, and please subscribe to Product Driven in your podcast app, and you can also check it out on YouTube. Thank you so much.
And we're back for another episode of Startup Hustle, a podcast for entrepreneurs by entrepreneurs. If you want to start, own, or build a business, then you're in the right place. We bring you the real truth about what it's like to take something from concept to launch. From growth, innovation, experience, failing, or winning big, we've got you covered. So let's get down to business with another episode of Startup Hustle, brought to you by Fullscale.io.
What's up, hustlers? Welcome back. This is Andrew Morgans, founder of Marknology, your host for today's episode of Startup Hustle, covering all things Amazon and e-commerce. Shout out to our sponsor for today's episode, Fullscale.io, helping you build software teams quickly and affordably. Today's guest is one that I have been excited to talk to, one I have been looking forward to meeting for a very long time. He's been in the Amazon space, like myself, is a founder of another Amazon agency. Michael Yanez, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Andrew. Yeah, no problem. Michael is the founder of Cart Smarter. But before we get into just like what exactly that is and what Cart Smarter does, how you kind of stand out in the space of Amazon advertising and Amazon management, let's talk about Michael a little bit. Like, how did you, get into e-commerce? Like, you know, where did you get your start? Have you always been an entrepreneur? Go back as far as you like. I'd like to kind of talk about those early days of your career.
Yeah, absolutely. So how it came about is I broke into the industry selling consumer IT, for example, consumer software into big box. Way back in the day, I'm going to age myself, CompUSA, Circuit City.
Oh, yeah. Well, love those.
Yeah. Also like your office superstores, Walmart, Best Buy, Target. And back then, there was right after books, Amazon adopted, IT, that was one of the first categories. So very early on, way before Marketplace or Seller Central, we were selling on Amazon our products via distributors.
Okay.
And so way back then, you could fly up to Seattle, have a meeting with the vendor manager. So obviously I got...
Can we talk about when that time was, like where you were dealing with like a real person on Amazon?
Mid-90s to the late... So the early 2000s, right? That would have been happening. And then once it moved over, they opened up Seller Central, I started to dab a little bit of that for my private clients, because by then I was consulting, helping bring European brands into North America. And one of the first things you do is you set them up on Amazon.
Yeah.
So I had some limited knowledge doing that, obviously, because everything was just kind of developing. And then
I just want to get into the details a little bit. How are you getting clients, like international clients? I know you're in the space, you're in, software packaged goods.
Yeah.
But then you're getting, maybe you've got some freelance clients you're helping bring over. Like, where were you getting those clients back?
Yeah. Then? So I had been in the industry so long, and when consumer PC really started to develop and become, sold out in retail and all that, I started my career very early in that space. Okay. And then, I built a reputation working for manufacturers and getting the product into every retail store, doing extremely well. So when I became a consultant, word just got out, and people would say, "Hey, you want to get into the US, call Michael." And I got very lucky, or, you know, going to trade shows and just talking to people and saying, are you trying to get into the US? And they would say yes. And, you know, so I would go to Europe, develop all of their strategies, teach them how to do an American box, you name it, from A to Z. I would get everything in place for them to come to the US. And then using all my contacts with the buyers, distributors, I would get them placement and then manage the business remotely. So it was really cool until it lasted. And then what happened, Andrew, is that the iPad came out and the whole consumer PC industry dropped. And then simultaneously, what happened was that it moved almost 100% online, right? And especially my specialty was consumer software. It died. And I was blessed and lucky in that I knew enough about Amazon to leverage that. So then about, let's call it 9, 10 years ago, I get this phone call from a recruiter and they go, hey, there's a food broker that needs an Amazon division. And we saw your resume. And I built up their e-com division from scratch and killed it. And so this is my second broker that, so I do have equity. I am an owner, but at the end of the day, I am working for someone. So it's not fully my agency, but I do have ownership.
Okay.
And I left that to go work for what I believe is a much, much better situation, because now I do have ownership. So I went to this food broker about 8, 9, 10 years ago. I can't remember now. Opened up a Seller Central account and just, you know, went to the clients of the parent company, started setting them up, and we just killed it. And a lot of our clients, not a lot, but the bigger portion of our clients were very large as seen on TV clients. Mm-hmm. And we specialized. We were the known broker. I'm sorry. We were the known Amazon agency to go to if you're doing any kind of media, mainly direct response, and you didn't understand Amazon. We were that agency that you would go to. So I have a lot of experience in managing brands that do a lot of off Amazon media buying.
Okay.
And whether it be direct response TV, direct response radio, podcast, all of that, we understand the metrics. We understand how to work with those clients to create very unique strategies on how they should be presented on Amazon.
I love that. And my brain is firing, Michael, because, you know, I think when you started getting into that food broker space is about when I started getting into Amazon as well. For me, it was 2011, 12, when I was out of school, I'd worked corporate for a while and then was an e-commerce manager, and two jobs in a row basically had me discovering Amazon for them, for their product lines. And, you know, I remember launching Chicago Steak Company, which is a client of ours. They're just a steak. They're like steaks on dry ice, you know, premium steaks. And I think there's a lot of food like that now. But when we launched that brand, there was no one kind of doing that. There was no one selling like fresh steak on Amazon.
Interesting.
Before, like, we know, and it was like creative in the way we were figuring out, well, if you had, you know, a $250 item, you know, pack of steaks that was sitting outside on a doorstep and that went bad, that was a huge return, a huge loss, you know. So we had to get real creative with handling time and really shipping orders like Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. If it went out Thursday, it could be delivered the following Monday, so nothing was sitting on the weekend. But it was fun. No one else was doing it. We were like crushing it, you know.
Good for you. I mean, that's an awesome story. And, you know, you pat yourself on the back, because here we are 10 years later and I still get those questions, right? So you were way ahead of the curve. I mean, people are still saying, well, what happens if it's just sitting there? And many years ago, I remember taking thinking out of the box, went to go to a local Los Angeles warehouse company that specialized in drop shipping refrigerated and frozen goods.
Okay.
And just going, oh my God, the cost involved and how bulky. And then I didn't have the balls. I just said, it's just not worth, you know.
Not ready. And, you know, in the early days, I was taking, so I asked where you got your clients at the beginning, because I got top 10 in the world on Upwork. I say that because there was no one else trying to get clients back then. That there was a lot of people selling on Amazon or working for companies, but there weren't a lot of people that were doing it as a service for others, that were actually like had websites and were marketing it and like pushing Amazon services or Amazon marketing, at least that I could find, you know. So it was like these freelancer sites, it was word of mouth, it was like forums. Oh, this guy's a great seller, he, you know, he sold his business for 10 million, see if you can get him to help coach you. But I was just like cleaning up on Upwork, taking clients like Chicago State Company or even Adidas and some of those from Upwork, because it was just, I would say, hey, I know how to do about one out of three things that you're asking for. I'll learn how to do the other two. As long as you understand, I got to learn it. And that's just how I got, you know, my hands dirty, I guess. A lot of times was just being real straightforward with people and being like, that sounds like a challenge. I'll take it, you know. And, you know, little by little, you just start getting, you start acquiring knowledge. One of the biggest things that, like, I like working with brands, you know, that are like, that care about top of funnel and are investing in branding. And, you know, it's obviously been the progression around Amazon selling, because they get the idea of off Amazon advertising and the value it has, you know, and those are the secret weapons. You can get someone that comes to me and is like, I just want to sell on Amazon. Here's my products. Here's what we can do. You're like, great. You're giving me about a third of the tools I can use to really make you successful on Amazon. You know, that you do, you start doing mailers and PR articles and you start getting like serious radio spots and you get, you know, you can really drive that momentum thing that we all know is required on Amazon with a lot of those off Amazon advertising strategies. So you brought that to the table kind of from the beginning.
Yeah. And I hear you, and, you know, you probably went to that one, conference at Prosper where they said the average cost per click on Amazon went up by more than 50% year over year, and that's not stopping. So there's two things. Now you could see why it's so important to allocate funds for off Amazon advertising. But you hit something you just mentioned about just this whole brand awareness. Like people say, you got to build your brand, got to build your brand. There's a reason why people say that. There's a, you know, there's, it's no secret that you've got to get that PR. You got to go figure out how to raise the funds if you don't have it to get people to learn about your product, because Amazon and, you know, your guys are probably miracle workers, but that miracle maybe only goes 60% to 70%. That brand has responsibility to help the rest of the way.
Part of the problem was that in the early days of selling on Amazon and to all the Amazon sellers we were talking to versus to brands we were talking to, because the brands are just now starting to pay attention. I'm generalizing, but in general, the brands are just now starting to pay attention. And it was, you know, the private label sellers, it was wholesalers, it was, you know, people trying to get out of their 9-to-5 that were embracing Amazon in the early days. And they were being successful without having a brand. Very much so. Like it was but this was an isolated case, this Amazon thing, right? And now that it's gotten more advanced, it's back to where it should be, which is brand matters and like top of funnel and all that kind of stuff matters. But I think there was a window where, you know, just with reviews, just with giveaways, just with understanding Amazon, where PPC was cheap and things like that, you could launch a brand, you could launch products successfully and make a lot of money just commoditizing products, not having brand. But, you know, that's changing. I really feel like that's changing.
Yeah. And if you don't mind me jumping around, I'm going to jump to maybe some questions you would have at the very end.
Yeah.
It's one of the reasons why I created a division we're just launching now, that we're as much a media agency as we are a e-com agency. So my parent company has a lot of clients that at the end of the day, they're so large, they don't need us.
Right.
But they, I could tell you now, they are probably not understanding how do you get in front of a millennial as an older brand, or they're going, oh, you know, we're doing great on Amazon. Our ROAS is fine and stuff. But, you know, now what's also critical for that external driving is that you got these little brands that are outmaneuvering them on Amazon, and they don't get it. They don't understand why they're that little brand's taking market share. Well, they have better strategies on Amazon, but they also know that for a younger audience, for example, they embrace the brands on so many different reasons. The larger, older brands don't know how to reach a younger audience. So I just launched the branding division where you don't have to be within my agency, e-com agency, for us to go out there and do your regular sponsored ads for Amazon, your DSP offline, your what they call OTT, it's over the top. So that includes Amazon owned entities, that includes Roku, Hulu, and so on. And then podcast, and then your traditional short and long-term TV commercials, mainly on cable network, but okay. It doesn't matter because we see so important. So I feel we could bring so much added value to clients that we don't manage, but whether or not they're the client of our parent company or not, it doesn't matter to me. I just feel we have a lot more to offer.
I love that. And, you know, something that's kind of interesting is your parent client, if I can call it that, you know, the broker, the food broker, the large one that you're now a partner with, is very much like one of these aggregators bringing you in to run their brands. Just you were doing it 10 years ago, right? Yeah. Hiring a sophisticated team to come in and take those brands and take them to the next level. And, you know, I have bragged for years silently to myself and my hole in Kansas City where no one knows what we were doing on Amazon for the longest time. You know, I'm taking a local brand from Arkansas, G Mama's Cookies or something, and I'm outperforming Nabisco, Chips Ahoy, Oreo, you name it. I'm outranking you for chocolate chips, you know, all those things. Why? Well, because those brands are so comfortable existing off of brand only. People that already know their brand, and I'm going and getting the customers that are just searching for chocolate chip cookies that have yet to make up their mind about a brand.
You absolutely are validating. Yeah, that's exactly what I'm talking about. Yeah.
And it's like, you know, so you type in chocolate chip cookies and I'm outranking the biggest players in the world in my mind. Right. And for me as a young guy passionate about e-commerce, I mean, so these small brands, to answer to the big brands that don't understand what's going on, these little brands are hiring someone like me, extremely passionate about Amazon and e-commerce, and I'm doing anything and everything I can to get them daylight, right? To get them market share, to get them found. And what does that take, and what are the strategies to do that?
You know how I explain it? Digital advertising, if you know what you're doing, is the ultimate equalizer. And when I'm talking to larger clients and I say, you know, this is a budget I recommend, the way I explain it, I go, when you have a brick and mortar meeting or whatever it is, are you eye level on the shelf? They go, yes. And can the little guys ever replace you? No. Well, guess what? In a digital environment, you already are got replaced. And that's they're like, nice. What? What do you mean? That's exactly how I explain it.
I love that. That's beautiful. And I've coined it as, you know, we're helping you optimize your shelf space just on Amazon, on the digital marketplace.
It's a good way to think,
This isn't about a distributor relationship, or this isn't about, you know, whoever's taking your products and putting them in the grocery store and setting them up on the shelf. You know, what's the difference you get in that primary placement, or if you've got a standalone little booth, you know, by the checkout line or wherever you're getting featured, it matters, right? So wouldn't you want the same thing happening digitally? And you know, with food brands, we have a handful of food brands even here at Marknology, and what we were able to accomplish during the pandemic is insane, you know, in regards to being able to take these small businesses, these small players, and grow them exponentially. Has been real fun to see. The food brands definitely took off in the pandemic from before.
Oh yeah, it went up from 2.5% to 10% of all grocery sales are now online for grocery products, which by the way, that's $100 billion, 10%. So that's pretty crazy. And so there's an interesting, so these food brands that you manage, Andrew, I would encourage them to think about grocery brick and mortar. I was at a trade show 2 years ago, the grocery shop one. And one of the most interesting takeaways was that, and this was 2 years ago, 40% of all new products on the grocery retail shelf was from a brand new brand. That was unheard of. And the reason being is because they're innovating. They're killing it on Amazon, and the buyers see that. And these retail buyers know that if something's killing it on Amazon, it absolutely makes a difference for brick and mortar.
So here's some of our strategy. I'm going to hit some of our listeners with a little bit of golden nuggets, and they can catch on or not. But like, for example, we've got some food brands. One, Canada has an export grant for food brands coming to the U.S. So if there's any Canadian brands listening, you can very much get quite a bit of money to hire an agency like Minor Michaels and get funded by the Canadian government to launch digitally in the U.S. So I've helped 3 or 4 brands get those grants and then essentially pay us to help launch them. So that's kind of fun. But also, like, strategy is just changing. It's the same business it's been, right? Like you said, but it's changing in regards to, you know, we can be selling on Amazon for 2 years. You know, I know that on Home Depot, for example, how well we do on HomeDepot.com dictates how much product they put into Home Depot's brick and mortar shelves. So if that's the case for Home Depot, you know, these algorithms and this AI doesn't all operate differently on the different platforms. A lot of them are very similar. So one could say the same thing is true for Amazon or Whole Foods or any local grocer that's trying to make their job easier. Well, let me just go to the best sellers on Amazon and seasoning and barbecue sauce and chips and pick what the customers like, right? Well, with some of our brands, to get a little bit more complicated with it, you know, we might be selling a year or 2 years, you know, taking zip code areas that we're selling a lot to. Okay. And then even if you're not down to the customer address, you don't need to know that to pick up zones to know where you're shipping to. And then we're contacting stores in those areas being like, look, we've sold, you know, 10,000 units to your zip code alone in the last 12 months. You know, we think we have a good customer base here. We would love to get products in your stores here in, you know, XYZ County. And then, you know, then you start geographically Facebook targeting, geofencing, you know, those areas. And so you're essentially picking your brick and mortars by how your e-commerce is doing. So, you know, you're then pitching those conversations with those buyers in those areas just gets a lot easier because you're saying, hey, we're selling to your zip code without you. Already, we would love to be in your store as well.
Brilliant. Absolutely.
So we're having some fun with some of those strategies and being able to geographically kind of pinpoint, well, where should we focus our brick and mortar strategy next? And using Amazon to do it as well as, like, you know, the other platforms.
Brilliant.
So like just that strategy can go backwards, you know, like you're encouraging brick and mortar and they're taking 40% of brands. Well, you know, use your e-commerce to help you expand and help you decide. You know, even food brands in Australia, we've been doing pretty well. Like, let's just say seasoning or more like dry goods, nothing like fresh, which I would love to talk to you about that. Maybe we go to that next. But, you know, more on the dry good chips and seasonings and popcorns. And, you know, those brands have done really well in Australia, COVID aside, you know, whatever's going on there, essentially because of the seasonality difference. Right. So hot cocoa here or. You know, barbecue seasoning here gets this, at least in the Midwest, goes out of season when the snow's down, but in Australia it's summertime. So, you know, using things like that to offset your seasonality, if you have a real seasonal type of food product as well, has been some of the outside the box ways we're approaching it. Okay. Let's get into Instacart. I don't know much about Instacart. Mm-hmm. I think you have to be in brick and mortar stores to actually leverage that, but I've landed in Amazon Fresh almost by accident. So essentially, you know, we get product listed on Amazon and then they might get reached out to by Whole Foods and get a Whole Foods account. And then it turns into, you know, it's got the Whole Foods, maybe single cans of tea or different things like that. But it hasn't been like a clear path to getting a brand registered into that. And even in the alcohol space, I have a couple alcohol brands that I know if I could get them into Whole Foods, some of them are big, if I could get them into a Whole Foods store or something like that, then they can be eligible to sell. At least that's what I understand. Let's talk about some of that. Like, I understand you're working for a food broker, so that has to be your kind of entry into that market with Amazon. How did that relationship kind of come about?
Yeah, and you, it's exactly right. So about 3 years ago, exactly when I was coming on board, Amazon Fresh decided that they needed to increase their catalog, Amazon Fresh catalog, with more up and coming, newer, exciting brands, and not always newer, but medium to smaller size brands. And historically, if you wanted to do business with Amazon Fresh, you had to cut them a huge annual check. And they realized that if any of these up and coming brands cut them a check, that it, at the end of the year, they weren't renewing. They just weren't getting the ROI. So they came up with the program. They reached out to us and said, hey, you guys have hundreds and hundreds of brands of all sizes. We want to start onboarding more brands, but not touch them. In addition to that, instead of them cutting a big check, we're going to do it on accrual, so there's no risk. We buy a product, we charge them an accrual amount, and so it's really based on a sale, right? And so the risk is mitigated. And we want you to manage that business. Bring us some of your clients for us to evaluate. Sign them. If we say yes, sign them up. And then what we do is we manage the entire relationship. We're the liaison between the vendor manager and the brand. We set up their vendor central account. We set up their catalog. We optimize it, manage all the reports and so on, manage their merchandising. So in exchange for an accrual, and the accruals are really healthy. They're 30, 40, and 50%.
Okay.
As you can imagine, most of our clients at the 30% level, but the higher your accrual, the more merchandising you get through the year. And being merchandised on Fresh is critical because they don't, when someone goes on Fresh, they don't type in a keyword. They browse exactly the way they do in store, right? Almost like a digital cart going down the aisles. So if you're not being merchandised, you're not being found. And with Fresh, if you're being merchandised and they put you in the cart.
When you say merchandise, let's just break that down for any listeners. When you say if they're not being merchandised, what do you mean exactly?
So when you're on Fresh and you're navigating on Fresh Shopping, you're going to see these little shovelers, these digital aisles, and it will say, have a happy week. And it like has nothing but ice cream, different vendors, right?
So highlights, kind of like highlighted. Or
kind of like highlighted, exactly. Yeah. And they're peppered throughout the site. And every category that you go in will have products specific to that category in these digital aisles that they're right in your face. You can't miss it. And so the probability that a customer is going to click on that as opposed to keep clicking deeper is a much higher probability. And what's cool about that is that you're there and the competition's not. And yeah. Once they are in that digital basket, guess what? The first two pages people go to when they log back on the Fresh are their history and their deals.
You bought this last time.
Yep. So once you're in there the first time, you're golden. You absolutely have to be present or merchandise on Amazon Fresh. So yes, you give up a nice hunky chunk of your profit, but you're growing the business. And we see that every year our clients renew, every year they're growing. Fresh is highly curated. And I do have to explain something. Ever since COVID, everybody and their mother now wants to jump into Fresh. So they close the spigot, so to speak. They're being extremely careful who they let into the program. And I'm not saying it's completely shut down, but you do have to have some kind of good sales history for me to present you now in the program. So before they were like, oh, this is like a pretty cool up and coming brand, but now they want to, they're being a little bit more choosy who they're letting in right now. And again, that's because in the past, people balked at their cost structure, but now they're not balking. They want in.
Yeah, obviously the pandemic changed a lot of things, didn't it?
Oh, yeah.
And we're the gatekeepers now. Honestly, we're the gatekeepers, and Amazon can work with specific agencies to do that, or they can do it themselves.
And look at, I encourage people to to try to reach a category manager at Fresh, because we are not the only way to get in for smaller and medium-sized companies. They may send you back to us, but they also have a program just called a trade program where you don't get any merchandising. You pay 15%. And, you know, category manager falls in love with you. They go, yeah, you have a choice. I'm not going to really deal with you. You have to do everything on your own. You probably won't hear from me. Here's 15% trade program. Go for it. You know, you're not going to get any merchandising, or go call up Michael. A little bit more expensive, but you're going to get merchandise, and they manage everything. They're going to, you know, everything's going to get set up by them. So, you know, either way, I still think that I'm not going to discourage people, because right now, look at Fresh is killing it.
Yeah. You shoot, and you don't know unless you take a swing.
Exactly. Well put.
Yeah. Like you just got to, I think that's something that's like, well, what about people spend so much time saying, well, what about Walmart? What about this? What about Whole Foods? I want to be in this one. I want to be in that one. Sometimes you just start, you know, it's like, what can you do on your own? And then by the time you apply again next year, well, you've been going a year on your own, getting sales, getting momentum, you know, maybe that conversation opens for you, you know? So you just got to start and start taking swings, you know, versus, you know, Amazon changes constantly too. So, you know, you don't know what their metrics are going to be in July versus August versus September for letting brands in. Maybe they've got, you know, they've caught up on onboarding new brands or getting some placements, and now they're ready for something new.
That's exactly. And every time I have a vendor manager meeting, that's the question I ask. When do you think this is going to open back up a little bit? Because you just never know. It's timing. And I was able to squeeze in a few clients because it was something they, you know, they're data driven, mm-hmm. and they probably saw a need, and they go, you know what, even though we had put a moratorium on new products and items, they went ahead with a few.
They wanted to make an exception.
Yeah.
Yep. Exactly. And that's something that, you wouldn't know that unless you just been in the space a long time. And you've asked the same question 10 times, you got a different answer 10 times. And, you know, you just start getting a little experience under your belt, knowing that you just got to keep swinging and keep making opportunities. And, okay, what's the best I can do? Okay, maybe Amazon's attention will come around in a year. You know, that's what happened with the tea brand, and Whole Foods was, Whole Foods reached out to us after we were doing it on our own and doing it well. And the brand looked amazing. And, you know, then they reached out and were like, well, we'd love to have you in Whole Foods in Colorado. You know, so sometimes even if you're getting that no, just like, well, what can you do on your own to get things going? And perhaps by the next time you approach them, they're like, well, they've done a little bit on their own. They're selling well. Let's get them in here, you know? So I just pass it on to anybody that's listening. That's, you know, I think I get so many inquiries about, well, what should we focus on? What should we do? Let's pause real quick for to give a shout out to our sponsor for today's episode, Fullscale.io, helping you build software teams quickly and affordably. If you're looking to scale your development team, Fullscale.io is a great place to start for that. Let's talk about Walmart grocery and some of the other things you do. So Walmart, you know, coming back from Prosper, I have a couple brands on Walmart, a couple of my own, like three or four. You know, I played with Amazon advertising maybe a year ago, got pretty bored. It was archaic, you know, and I'd just rather take that money and spend it on Amazon at that time. But I know that, you know, they've acquired Jet. They're making big moves in the pandemic. Amazon Prosper, you know, Tim Jordan was big on Walmart and all the reasons why. And it's pretty convincing, you know, the 10,000 stores they have in rural America and how, you know, they essentially could be if they can get the digital stuff in line, the distribution logistics for Walmart is prime, you know, prime to crush it. And, you know, they have a distribution center in every rural town in America. So let's talk Walmart grocery. It's like something I don't know much about, you know, have a few brands on Walmart, but very basic. What's the opportunity here?
Yeah, it's the same thing. So here's the opportunity. As you know, their marketplace until recently did not have the equivalent of like an FBA program. Mm-hmm. And for a lot of our clients, that was a non-starter. So we're as an agency late because we were only able to get started once they said, hey, you could use our warehouse system and we'll go ahead and start shipping. But to your point, a lot of people shop on Walmart. And if you could do extremely well there, it's very possible that it will open the door into getting into Walmart retail. And even if it's a test, that's saying a lot. I mean, at the end of the day, they are still the number one largest retailer in the world by far. And they have unfathomable foot traffic, right? Brick and mortar. So, and at the end of the day, if you look at the growth of e-commerce as well for them, it's growing and they're taking it serious. They're, yes, they always seem to kind of trip over themselves. I see a lot of positive. I really do. And I think it's something now to start seriously looking, but it does make me chuckle about what you said about their advertising. It's still kind of clunky, but you got to start somewhere. They're cleaning up their act little by little.
Yeah, I just say that as someone that I like the levers. I like to be able to pull the levers, and advertising is really, before I got into photo optimization and storytelling with branding and real SEO research and all those things on Amazon, I was getting results for brands just with ads alone, and really being able to just really understand them as they came out, like diving into them. Toot our own horn a little bit, but Marknology is one of 60 of the Amazon advertising partner agencies that was brought in 2019 as a partnership program. And 58 of those are software companies. So we're one of two that's on the service-based side for advertising. It's just something I geeked out about early on. And, it was before SEO was proven, before it, because there wasn't thought leadership in this space in a lot of ways. There wasn't people saying, oh, that SEO works and this is how you track keywords. And it was, get a bunch of reviews on your product and you'll sell a lot. But it was advertising that was making up for all of this bad SEO that was on the platform, bad keywords. If you had great advertising, you could still cover all of that space, especially early on when cost per click was lower and things like that. And so I know it's a big part of getting your product seen, whether it's on Walmart or wherever you are, is understanding kind of how that platform works and how the ads work and getting that visibility. So I'm trying to be like, hey, embrace change. I got to continue to embrace change even when you get real comfortable with another platform and realize that, hey, Walmart's here to stay. They bought Jet.com. I was real excited about Jet back in the day, a few years back. And then it just, the catalog bogged down and they kind of shut down. Now Walmart's acquired them and it's bringing them up to speed rather quickly. And I think that, something you have to think about is Walmart and Amazon are at odds most of the time. It's one of the main, marketplaces that Amazon's watching for price, price manipulation. And, I've had issues on Walmart where we had the same price. I had a seller that does about $8 million on Amazon a year with four SKUs. And we were also on Walmart in the early days. And we had the pricing the same, but Walmart had like a 5% in-store discount if you picked it up. And so while that, you had to go through a Walmart rep to get that price changed, and we didn't realize it, but that made the item like 15 cents cheaper or something than Amazon when you did the math or whatever, but it was enough to have us lose the buy box. And we just couldn't find out why, because the pricing looked the same. We knew we had MAP pricing, like nothing was going on. So launching on these different marketplaces can add challenges to what you're doing, if you're an Amazon seller, but it's also a great opportunity and you don't want to be left behind. And so I'm happy to see Walmart get into the game and kind of give some competition to Amazon. I think good competition between two big marketplaces can result in better, exposure for so many sellers. Like Walmart in Google rankings, when you search on Google Shopping or something like that, Walmart is just everywhere. So if you're a brand trying to get more exposure, Walmart search results do the trick on Google, and it's worth considering. So Amazon Fresh locked up Walmart grocery. Is it still an open opportunity for sellers looking to, get product there? And does grocery mean, when you say Amazon Fresh and Walmart grocery, for myself and for anyone listening, does that just mean like fresh produce type products?
So Amazon grocery is completely different. That's controlled by the buyer at corporate.
Okay.
Yeah. And so that's something we're not involved in. That would be, either getting into Walmart on your own or getting, you know, using a broker to get into Walmart, because Amazon Grocery is, you know, by definition would be delivery or pickup. And for delivery, some regions do use Instacart, and in other cases, they're using their own system. So that's something I am not involved in, but our parent company would be for their clients.
Let's spend a little time on Instacart. For my understanding, as someone that hasn't used it, I need to just to know how it works. I understand it to be, you know, like an app that you use to basically have someone like a Postmates driver go get you groceries from the local pickup, but you have to list your products on there, kind of like a restaurant that's using Postmates has to, like, you know, pay to have their restaurant listed there, like create their menu of items. Is that how Instacart works? Or
yeah, so I'll explain the good and the bad. The good is that they dominate the grocery space with over 65% market share, meaning that of all the grocery stores across the US, Instacart is the delivery partner for 65% of those grocery stores. So if you are a brand that are in quite a few grocery stores across the nation or even regionally, the chances are that by default, now your product is available on Instacart. And why is that important? It's important because so many more people want their product groceries delivered to them. And Instacart has made it extremely easy. So every 24 hours, the data is updated. If, like here in Los Angeles, we have Ralph's. If you get a brand new product on the shelf in Ralph's, by midnight, it's live on Instacart. That means someone could go to Ralph's.com, which for all intents and purposes is Instacart, order that product and other products, and 2 hours later, whatever, it's delivered by Instacart. So as a brand, you do nothing. There's nothing you have to do. The bad part is that you have to be in retail. You have to be on that shelf to be on Instacart. So that's the bad part. And people always ask me, well, how many grocery stores should I be in for it to make sense to start advertising with Instacart? And I would say you probably want to be in a minimum of 1,000 storefronts, which normally would encompass 2 to 3 major grocery stores. Okay. So if you're in 2 to 3 major grocery stores, and you're in 1,000 storefronts, then I would feel very comfortable for you to advertise with Instacart. And Instacart at that moment, it's an advertising play. Okay. It's as a brand, they make it extremely easy and flexible. They give you an account to set up. There's no contract. We go in there then. We have our own login. We go in, set up your campaign. We strategize with the client on their current monthly sales and come up with the budget proposal. And then my team just takes over and manages that campaign. And it goes back to the point where it's what we do is we create eye-level marketing. Someone goes on there and types in barbecue sauce. Our client is going to appear in the front top digital aisle. 85% chance you're going to convert at that point, at that moment.
I love it.
Our ROAS have been incredible. The most minute budget, we see incredible results. And it's just a very powerful advertising platform.
I love it. Okay, so you get listed for free by being in the grocery store. You're just automatically listed. But if you want to advertise, if you want to optimize kind of your marketing, your promotional stuff, you either need to do it yourself or hire a team that can get in there and really run your ads at a high level.
That's correct.
Okay. I love it. This has been very informative and, you know, some stuff that I just haven't dug into on my end because it hasn't presented itself. You know, I'm not working with in-store food brands, you know, at that level. If I'm working with food brands, I'm in my lane and they're in theirs. And, you know, I'm always trying to give them opportunities, you know, and point them in the right direction, whether that's a warehouse or a good 3PL or, you know, any number of things. But for example, I've got a big manufacturer out of Costa Rica that I've started working with, a big food manufacturer out of Costa Rica, cereal bars, real like healthy, you know, cereals like Frosted Flakes, but all natural, all organic. Costa Rica is really big on, you know, their certifications and health and things like that. So some products I think will do really well here. We're kind of in the early stages. But that's a brand that down the road might be a great fit for, you know, for storefronts and stuff here in the US, and being able to say, hey, this is Instacart might be a good option, not now. But you know, if this happens, then this becomes an option. And, you know, just knowing exactly where that fits in is going to be good for me. So I appreciate you breaking those down. As we're rounding out, you know, before we get done, what are, you know, you're working on a lot of stuff. You've got, as you said, hundreds and hundreds of brands within kind of the parent company that you're working with. You've got projects that you work with outside of that, like whether it's helping brands get off Amazon, you know, off Amazon top of funnel traffic and things like that. What's got you excited in the morning when you get up, like, to work on? Which of your projects, like, you know, is really something you're passionate about right now? Which of these areas, if you had to choose one?
That's a great question. One, as you know, Amazon is very much category agnostic. So it's a whole world of opportunity. And to answer your question, there's probably two or three things.
Yeah.
One of them is that what will be the new category that would make sense to kind of start researching and going, you know, I think we could do well. And how would we build this out? Right. That would be one. But number two is, it's all kind of tied in together where Amazon is creating tools to make it easier and even giving you incentives to drive external traffic, right?
Yep.
Those tools did not exist a few years ago.
Maybe what do we call that incentive? It just came out.
Yeah, I forget, but it's awesome. And I don't even think attributes was around a year ago. Maybe. No.
I'm actually involved in the attribution betas, like, testing, I guess, if you want to call that, like, you know, kind of just being a user and being involved in that program on the advertising side, working with some of my clients to be like, how does this work? What are ways we can improve? And it's come a long way. Yeah. You know, Amazon is definitely something that they release stuff before it's perfect, and then we perfect it for them. You know, they're like the Android, you know, versus the Apple company. But attribution, and then this newer program we were talking about, my mind's blanking, but essentially you get 10 or 15 points back, I think, for
exactly. Hey, and that's Amazon better traffic than a kick, you know, and you know where, right?
Yeah,
it's nice. It's not a, hey man, it makes a difference. So you could see how important this is, and it plays extremely well that I had a vision, you know, 6-7 months ago to start thinking how, well, it's not just going to be the Amazon, what is it, DPS or whatever, which is, you know, for larger brands anyway. And it, you only get so results. But I am a, you know, I have a background in direct response media, and that works. And I know it works. And I also know that I have to help my clients reach a younger audience. And you know, there's all these cool things now. They younger audience watches streaming, right? Mm-hmm. And now you can advertise on streaming. That really didn't exist. You know, maybe 18 months ago. Yeah, it did, but not the way it is now. And, you know, this podcast, your podcast, right? So I think that to help my clients or help any client out, just being able to provide ways to drive specifically because it hopefully to Amazon, you know, finding ways for them to go out there and reach a much larger audience. And for the ones that are already positioning towards a millennial, for example, on Amazon and everything that they're doing in terms of brand awareness, as we discussed very early in today's conversation, it's becoming difficult just to only do it on Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
It really, and every single day there's a competitor probably being set up on Amazon that's going to compete against you.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe they have a lot of venture capital so they can outspend you on Amazon. Then what do you do? So it makes me excited that I'm, you know, we're going to be provide these other solutions to continue to compete.
I love it. And I'm obsessed with the same stuff. I call it holistic e-commerce, which is just not just Amazon or web or brick and mortar or any of those things being in their own silo, you know, but it's how do these all work together? You know, how do you get customers that are buying you on Amazon or in store to also know that you're in both? or that, you know, they can find you here, engage with us on social media, or look at our TikTok, you know, our account that we have. And, you know, a big part of my team has been trying to get people right out of school, UMKC, people that are passionate about marketing and advertising, because even at 34, I'm 10 years ahead of 24 and 18. And, you know, it just continues to change, and technology is evolving so fast, I can barely keep up with my iPhone, you know? traditionally it's been with advertising or marketing or most career industries, like experience just outweighed everything else. You got 20 years in advertising or 20 years in marketing. Someone coming out of school can't even compete with that. But when you've got things changing so fast, and you've got, you know, this influencer marketing and tech and all those things kind of changing, you really have to just be focused on what's next. You know, what do they care about now? You know, which is brand story and authenticity and all those, honestly, things that I appreciate. You know, I want to know what's in my foods, and I want to know who I'm buying it from. And I want to know, like, do they treat their people right? And are they using child labor? And, you know, that's the millennial mind. And I think that's okay. It's not just like, you know, where's this come from, but it's where's this come from and who made it and what's in it. And, you know, all those things.
You could not have said it better. And that's what we try to educate our clients about, that that's what they're looking for.
Yeah. So we got to tell that. So it comes back to Amazon and storytelling and brand awareness and doing a good job of saying why this product is different than the next. And, you know, what makes this product different? Well, it's my grandma's recipe, and, you know, we've had it for 120 years and it's just been an Alabama thing, and we want to expose it to the rest of the world. And here's our cookies, and we hope you love them, you know. And that can be as simple as it is, but versus Kraft, or, you know, just a cool, I've heard of that. My mom has had Kraft in my kitchen my whole life, but there's no attachment. There's no relationship to, you know, I'm using that as an example to just say, right, like, you know,
and it's a very good example. That's a perfect example.
Awesome. Yeah. And I love doing that. I love helping these brands stand out. I love helping the big brands, you know, figure their purpose out too. We've got Faultless Brands is a company that's 125 years old, I think, or I could be a little bit off, but they're over 100 years old here in Kansas City, have always been a, you know, direct to retail, you know, sending product by pallets and things to grocery stores and department stores for, you know, faultless starch for ironing your clothes or cleaning messes or something like that. If your mom has ever ironed, you've used faultless starch before. But they're not, you know, in that relationship, these brands, these manufacturers that are household names, they're not getting direct feedback from the customers like you are on Amazon or these different channels where I'm selling to Joe and Joe's saying, hey, I loved your product, or hey, I hated your product. And then coming back and being like, well, Joe hated our product and Susie hated our product. What can we do to make it better? And getting that direct, you know, that direct feedback and adjusting and optimizing, continuing to stay relevant. And helping those older brands bridge that gap is really fun and exciting too. And, you know, helping them stay relevant and get into e-commerce and keep some of these staple companies relevant for the next 50 years. You know, so I hear you on that. It is a lot of fun. I'm still having fun out here on Amazon. Like, you know, Amazon can make you pull your hair out sometimes, but it's really awesome what we can do for brands that are doing the right things.
Yeah. Awesome. And I guess the last thing would be, if there was going to be a third, is, you know, I've done international in the past, both going both directions, and on Amazon, and just, expanding into that a little bit more now. Yeah.
Yeah. No, literally we're on the same page in that regard. Like, we've been getting a lot of Italian brands, you know, that we're launching here in the US. I mentioned Canada. So it's not all over. You kind of get in a pocket and you kind of, like, you know, you just get referred out to different brands in that same, you know, segment or whatever. But international expansion, like we said, Australia been huge. You know, what are some of the markets, you know, even to any international listeners, you know, the US is made up of every culture under the sun, you know, so sometimes even just bringing household staple brands from, like, let's say Italy or, you know, Costa Rica, which are two I'm actually working with, bringing them here, you know, the people that have enjoyed those brands growing up or their grandparents have enjoyed those brands that they just haven't had access to them, can immediately create a win for you here just by getting the product into the US and getting exposed to that demographic that lives here. You know, we found a lot of success with some of those products.
Yeah. And I, and I don't know if it was due to Amazon or clever marketing, but some of these, what you would call ethnic brands, do become embraced by all Americans. I think maybe a bad example would be Greek yogurt, but I do see like some Brazilian products, the little fluffy things starting to be everywhere now as well. And I didn't see, I didn't even know until I saw it on maybe Amazon one day. I go, what are these? And then, you know, 6-7 months later, I see it in Costco. I go, oh, okay. Yeah. So,
yep. I love that. ZestyZ is one that came to mind. We worked with out of Brooklyn, New York, and it was popcorn and seasoning and condiments, but za'atar from the Mediterranean, you know, is something that's new, that's coming out, that everyone's kind of getting on the bandwagon with. And as someone that grew up overseas and traveling, like, I love seeing that. And Amazon's a great place to kind of introduce those brands without getting a big broker on board, you know, before they can buy into it. You can test it on Amazon, get some results, and, you know, change that conversation. So, Michael, I could go back and forth with you all day. I love this stuff. And, you know, we're fighting a lot of the same battles, maybe a little bit different battleground in some ways. But, you know, the end goal just being trying to help brands and trying to help, you know, businesses find success in e-commerce at the end of the day. And I think the three things you hit on are exactly what I would say, which is international expansion. It's ways to find, you know, finding ways to grow sales outside of just Amazon. Why off Amazon advertising is so critical. You know, and ultimately just helping brands get that top of funnel awareness and exposure and you know, dominate the platform. What we say, optimize that retail shelf space, you know?
Absolutely.
I love it. We're going to have you on here again for a part two. I know I'm going to have some follow-up questions, and we're getting up on that hour mark. So before we say goodbye, shout out once again to our sponsor for today's episode, Fullscale.io, helping you build software teams quickly and affordably. Michael, are you going to be in any conferences coming up, like maybe the one in Brooklyn later this month or anything in Vegas?
No, I'm going to be at a couple of food shows in September back east. So two of the big food shows. But I did eye those conferences, and I'm thinking about sending some of my colleagues that are on the East Coast to those ones. So if they end up going, I'll definitely let you know. But I had a wonderful time. This was fantastic. I appreciate the opportunity, and I would love to come back on.
Awesome. Well, we'll have you back. If I don't see you at a conference soon, when we do, there's a beer on me. We'll just have to keep talking shop. Okay. Really appreciate it. And you have a good rest of your day.
Thank you. You too. Cheers.
Startup Hustle's brought to you by Fullscale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. Make sure you reach down and hit that subscribe button, then come find us on Instagram. See you next time. We do it.